Good afternoon and welcome to the greatest baseball podcast to grace your ears, Cheap Seats Chatter. I'm today's host, Matthias Altman-Kurosaki, and with me, as always, we have my amazing co-hosts. We have Alex Clark and Ryan Splash Potts, Mr. Splashman, of course. Gentlemen, we're recording a bit earlier in the day today, as I am about to head out to the West Coast, but how are we doing on this fine Monday afternoon?
You're heading to the wrong part of the West Coast, but man, you need to be heading a little farther north, as I hear you're going over to the California region. You're heading over to Washington, where we're having some amazing weather, although albeit a little bit smoky, but it's beautiful sun, no clouds in the sky. I am still working through my depression after watching the Mariners lose it in 3 to the Astros, but we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show.
I'm going to describe how I'm feeling by reading off 39 plate appearances. Strikeout, strikeout, walk, strikeout, walk, strikeout, 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 walk, strikeout, 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 RBI ground out, strikeout, walk, strikeout, 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 walk, strikeout, walk, walk, strikeout, 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 walk, strikeout, 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 line out. That's how I'm feeling right now.
So I take it you're doing great.
Yeah, I am. Shout out to Shaq Thompson, Carolina Panthers legend, stunk at minor league baseball, but he made it work. He found a path. He found something he's good at. Hopefully I find something that doesn't make me clinically depressed.
I mean, there was an RBI in there.
Yeah, I was going to say you did rack up an RBI there.
Yeah, I got a one RBI.
Yeah, well, yeah. So personally, I mean, I mean, my Mets got eliminated a little over a week ago. So yeah, I sort of took this week just to, you know, just watch baseball. You know, I know a lot of people are like, oh my God, I'm done watching baseball. You know, or I'm done watching until next season or something. But I feel like a lot of us were just like, yeah, might as well turn on the playoffs or something. So. That's how my week was. Yeah, I'm flying to California tomorrow early in the morning. Then I'll be heading to Colorado. It's looking a little. It was sunny earlier, I think, and now it looks like it's getting cloudy here in New York. And there is a big game tonight, in case people don't know. But anyways, let's dive right into it. So a little over a week ago, we were talking about how all three of us had our teams in the playoffs, and unfortunately, that is no longer the case. That is pain, but. Anyways, let's talk a little bit about these division series. Let's start in the NL. And why don't we start with the Braves and the Phillies? This is one, and unfortunately, maybe we just mushed all the teams, but we've gotten every single pick in the National League wrong thus far, if we look back to our original picks. So, guys, what do we make of this? I mean, I did not expect this to happen at all.
Okay. As the resident Braves fan, you watch this team all year, and one thing that stuck out to me more than any other Braves team I've watched, more than really any other team I think I've ever watched, is the production that came from the bottom of the order, 7, 8, 9. This was a lot of times the DH spot, whether it's Contreras or d'Arnaud or Robbie Grossman. This is where Von Grissom had a lot of his success. This is where Michael Harris had a lot of his success. This is where Dansby had a lot of his success early in the season. All year, they had the best team, 7, 8, 9. And that fueled the top. That fueled Acuna. That fueled Dansby when he was batting leadoff or batting second. It fueled Riley and Olson. And that was just something the Braves all season, even when they were struggling early on, they had a deep lineup. They had capable hitters. They had someone batting in the seven hole that you said, they can hit the baseball, right? Even Ozzie Albies, who kind of scuffled this year, he can still hit the baseball. Adam Duvall led the NL in RBI last year. Marcelo Ozuna hits the ball hard. You know, so it's like just lineup depth, lineup depth, lineup depth. And then you watch the Philly series, and it felt like 7, 8, 9 had never seen a baseball before. Orlando Arcia was the only competent player in that group. He drew 2 walks in 1 game and hit a home run in game 4. Other than that, Michael Harris was terrible. You got 0 production out of left field. It was just disaster. And then you flip it over to the Phillies. And the Phillies all year, it's like, okay, well, you have Harper and Hoskins and Schwarber and Castellanos and sometimes Alec Bohm. And it's like, okay, what is 6, 7, 8, 9 going to do? What is Gene Segura going to do? What is Bryce Stott going to do? What is Brandon Marsh going to do? Things like that. Well, they raked. They did as much as I've seen the 7, 8, 9 hitters in a lineup do in this series. And it's just, it was kind of like a taste of your own medicine of the Braves all year were successful because the bottom of the lineup fueled the top. And then the Phillies, the biggest momentum swing in the entire series was Bryson Stott's 9 pitch at bat against Spencer Strider. Strider ran out of gas immediately. Stott rips a double, RBI double. Then you walk Schwarber, very next pitch, Hoskins tomahawks 500 feet. And the game's over. The series feels like it's over right there. And that doesn't happen if Bryson Stott doesn't work that at bat. That doesn't happen if, you know, if you flip the lineups. That doesn't happen if Michael Harris is at the plate, he strikes out. Or if Marcell Ozuna is at the plate, he strikes out. Or William Contreras, it's a ground ball right to the second baseman, and it's a force out at second because someone's going to make a base running error for some reason. So it obviously sucks as a Braves fan. I guess they're on the bright side. None of the games you lost, games 3, game 4 in particular, they weren't close. So I wasn't like, I didn't get my heart ripped out like the Ravens do every single week, or like in 2020 when the Braves lost a 3-1 lead to the Dodgers and choked away game 7 per usual. But like, credit to the Phillies. They beat the Braves at what the Braves do best. They got excellent pitching from Austin Nola, Aaron Nola in game 3. Zach Wheeler did enough in game 2. He put them in a position that Wheeler could go out in game 5 and you could feel good about your chances. Ranger Suarez worked in game 1, threw a lot of pitches, but he got out, so only allowed 1 run. And the Phillies bullpen, other than game 1, which was a little shaky in game 1, but they got the job done. Dominguez, mound man, Jose Alvarado, they got the job done, and they're moving on to Petco Park. So props to Philadelphia.
Here's my thing. I look at this, and a quick trip to baseballreference.com really kind of shows, I think, the tale, in my opinion. Like, for those that didn't get to watch it, I feel like you would just go to these stats, and you would look at the overall stats for both teams, and without knowing how the games worked, you'd have a pretty good idea about who won the series. And it's the first thing I go to, obviously, I like to go to batting average. Well, as a team, batting wise, for the Philadelphia Phillies, they had a team batting average of 271. The Braves had a team batting average of 180. As a team batting under the Mendoza line, that's a problem. Okay, but there's more that can happen. You know, there's more that can be looked at. Let's take a look at the pitching side of things. Well, Philadelphia's ERA in the series was a 3.09. That's a very, very good ERA. The only real problems that were Connor Brogdon with a 13.5 ERA and Zach Eflin with 11.57. Other than that, everyone else has looked pretty good. I mean, Zach Wheeler got at a 4.50, but even that's not bad. Looking at the pitching side of things, Max Fried had an ERA of over 10. Charlie Morton had an ERA of over 13, and Spencer Strider had an ERA of nearly 20. That's a problem. That is a problem for a team ERA right now of 5.82. Now, I know that batting average and ERA are not the only stats you really need to look at. You need to look at other things like that, yes. But I think it's a really heavy indicator of how things were going in this playoff series, and it just came down to the fact that there just wasn't enough hitting for Atlanta, and when they needed to make pitches in the big spots, they just didn't. That's what we see here. I mean, the fact that, I mean, you look at the Braves hitting stats, batting average-wise, again, the one I like to use a lot. There was Acuna, Orlando Arcia, Travis d'Arnaud, and Matt Olson were the only ones to bat above 300. Actually, I'm going to amend that. That is those are the only players to bat above 125. Because other than that, you had William Contreras, who batted 125. Juan Grissom with not a one. Robbie Grossman, also not a one. And Michael Harris batting 071. And then going even further, Ozuna, zero. And Eddie Rosario, zero. And Austin Riley, again, one of the players that we've all kind of agreed is one of the best young players in baseball, batted .067. And then Dansby with a 125. I mean, it's just, it's hard to really comprehend, because we take a look at this, and I will fully admit that before this, I thought that the Braves were going to sweep through this. I thought the Braves were far and away the better team, but the Phillies had that fight, and the Phillies continued to work on and work harder, in my opinion. This was a very interesting series, but I mean, I'm not going to say the better team lost. I am going to say that the Braves just could not get it done when they needed to most.
Yeah, and really, I mean, look, we all had the Braves winning in four games. And coming into this series, I mean, there was no reason not to think that. The Braves have by far the more star power. I thought up and down they had better pitching staff. I thought they had one of the best lineups in baseball, if not the best lineup in baseball. But what I saw other than game one when they put up six, I mean, the Phillies just completely shut down that Braves lineup. And sometimes, you know, you only go as far as your stars carry you. And the Braves stars did not show up other than, you know, as Alex was saying, other than Acuna, Olsen, and Darnell, it felt like nobody else in this team showed up. Hey, Orlando Arcia did all right. But the Phillies, I mean, Bryce Harper came to play 8-for-16 with two homers. You had Nick Castellanos have a pretty solid series. You know, Rhys Hoskins had that big home run in game three off of Spencer Strider. You know, Gene Segura had a great series going 6-for-13. Brandon Marsh, I mean, he only had 8 at-bats, but he came through. I mean, he had a 3-run homer. And it just felt like they when they got men on base, they came through. And it whether that meant hitting a home run or, you know, stringing together hits, it just felt like they were always getting things done, executing, while the Braves just straight up were. And also, the Phillies pitching staff struck out the Braves 43 times in a four-game series, including 15 times in game four. I mean, I get that the Braves had got by all year by hitting home runs and striking out a lot, but sometimes striking out a lot doesn't work, especially when you're not hitting as many homers. In fact, the Braves and Phillies were even in home runs this series, which I don't think, you know, I think that's sort of a testament to where the Braves' bats were at. You know, they didn't perform the way they did all season. And big props to the Phillies pitching staff. I mean, I did not expect the bullpen, especially, to come through the way they did. And, you know, Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler, I expected things from them. And I get Wheeler sort of had a rough outing, allowing 3 runs in the 6th inning of game two. But you also got to wonder what's going through your mind when you intentionally walk a guy who didn't have a hit in the postseason yet. Intentionally walking Kyle Schwarber in front of Rhys Hoskins was a massive mistake by Strider, in my opinion. The thing is that Strider also looked like he had no gas on his pitches all of a sudden. Like, first 2 innings, he cruised. I don't know what happened in the 3rd inning, and it was just ugly. So I think the Braves are definitely still going to be formidable in the years down the line. I mean, they've locked up their core other than Dansby, really. So, yeah, that was definitely a shock. So that was surprising. Now let's cross over to the AL side for a second. We talked about Splash's Braves. Let's talk about the Astros Mariners series. Three hard fought games by both teams, in my opinion. None of which were decided by more than 2 runs. Alex, since you're the Mariners guy here, why don't you go first on this one?
What rating is our podcast again?
I wish I could tell you there.
No, I know what it is, but I'm not going to take that. We do have the explicit mark on these, but I'm not going to use it. Oh, yay. All right. I'm going to start off with this by saying I'm not angry. I am so proud of this team for what they did, because this was truly a miracle run for them. I'm so happy to see that the young players did extremely well. So let's talk about the series. The first game had so much hope to it. I'm going to try to avoid the stats as much as I can for this, because I want to talk more about the eye feel from this one. I go to the stats a lot. for this team. I watched every single one of these games, every single one of these innings, every single pitch. And man, that first game filled me with so much hope. Watching this, the Mariners take a lead from the get-go and carry all the way until the bottom of the ninth. The bottom of the ninth will forever be burned in my memory for just how bad that was. I understand that, you know, Swanson potentially has an injury that needs to get through or something was going on, but that was the perfect definition of how you ruin a game. You got your outs, you got your two outs, but then you got two other people on, including walking a player who had never had a postseason appearance before, a player that had played less than 50 games in the major leagues, and you walk him to get a rally started. And then having, I believe it was Altuve next, get on base because he's Jose Altuve, and then bringing in Robbie Ray to face off against the second best hitter on the planet, Yordan Alvarez, who after one meatball fastball takes the second one in the nearly the exact same location and blasts it all the way into the stratosphere. It was at that moment where I'm like, oh no. Oh, I panicked, because at that point, that is a hard loss to take. That's where you have led for 26 outs. You have led the entire game, and then at the very end, lose it. Because it was almost a mere opposite of what happened in Toronto, where Seattle was down by so many, and they came back to win it. Seattle was up by a solid amount, and then came back, and then the Astros came back to win it. Game two, it was a different story. It was definitely much more in the Astros' favor, though, than in the last game. But regardless, that game, even then, still felt winnable at every point of the game. Seattle actually had a lead from the top of the fourth inning all the way to the bottom of the sixth. And it just, at that point, it felt good. Luis Castillo pitched his heart out and couldn't get, which, by the way, the pitching for this series was really dang good, especially as we get to talking about the third game. And oh my, if you had to pee at the beginning of the game, there is not a chance you held it all the way throughout, or you now have a serious bladder infection. 18 innings. 18 friggin' innings. My gosh, this was a game that I never thought I would ever see. A game that goes 18 innings is unheard of. A total of 18 hits between the two teams, and one run is scored. Where, yes, there was a lot of runners that were left on base. There were a lot of runners left on base. This was a game that really could have been won by either team well before this point, for finally Jeremy Peña opened it up with a home run into the pen. Like, I've watched that game, and I remember going and just losing my mind off of every strikeout or every third out. Or because the bullpens for both teams were insane. I mean, just think about the logistics of this. To go 18 innings scoreless. Let's go 17 innings scoreless. That's how far it really did to go scoreless. That is, a starter normally goes about, you know, 6-7 innings on a good day, maybe 8. That is going through that nearly 3 times without a single run scored. Was that inept offense? No. I really don't think it was inept offense. I think the pitching was just that damn good. And I would really like someone else to try to tell me otherwise. Because watching that game, yes, the offense did not look perfect, but man, the pitchers for both the Astros and the Mariners, God, Luis Garcia, I mean, I got to give credit to an Astro, so you don't shoot me now. But Luis Garcia came in and did one of the best long relief jobs I've ever seen. Coming in and then watching all these Mariner relievers, one after another, just keep coming in was also stupidly impressive. It's a hard one to take. It's really a hard series loss, especially after such an amazing year for Seattle overall. But, and I'll talk more about this team a little bit later on, because I want to make sure that we have time to talk about everything else. But as a Mariner fan, I am not angry. The only thing I'm angry about is the Astros social media team and how classless they were immediately after with a number of posts that they made. But, you know, that just makes me sound salty. But even they've gone back and said, okay, yeah, we went a little too far.
Okay, I will say, first off, before last Saturday, there had never been a playoff game go 13 scoreless innings. The longest was going into the 13th scoreless. The Braves walked off on the Reds in a 2020 wild card game. And I think the Cubs and Rockies, I believe, were scoreless into the 13th, something like that. And then Guardians Rays goes into the 15th scoreless. Oscar Gonzalez, Mr. SpongeBob Man, walks it off with a ding-dong. And then this game says, hold my beer. Folks, there were 102 outs recorded before a run was scored in this game. Both teams went up 17 times and failed to score 17 times in game three. It lasted so long that Field Yates, NFL reporter, was reporting that the Cardinals and Seahawks were going to play on Tuesday because their start time was going to be influenced by whether or not Seattle was playing. Seattle, the Mariners in this case, the Mariners were playing on Sunday. If they had a game four, they would have played at like noon Pacific time, and the Seahawks Cardinals game would have been pushed back to 2 Pacific. So they would have played at 5:30-ish Eastern time. So the Cardinals and Seahawks, the football teams, had no idea what was going on. And this game just keeps on keeping on. And it felt there's like a switch that I think a lot of games undergo here. I have a weird nugget about 18 inning games, but when you have 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th innings, those innings in a scoreless game or a low scoring game, it feels almost manufacture runs territory. This is when get a base runner, any base runner is a rally, any base runner, you have a shot, you know, whether it's a walk or hit by pitch or a single, and then you one swing of the bat, you don't even have to hit it out of the ballpark. You know, Alex can speak to this with the Martinez double, right? If a guy's on first, he can score on a ball hit to a gap, right? Or you bunt him over and then a single scores him from second. And you have like small ball baseball. And then after like the 13th inning, everyone wants to be the hero. Every single batter. So Alex, I agree with you that it was impressive to watch the pitchers, but I do think the pitchers got bailed out a little bit by some vastly aggressive swings from both sides. There were a lot of first pitch swings. There were a lot of pop-ups. There were a lot of lazy fly balls, lazy ground outs. So pitching was awesome, but they did get a little bit of help. It was like a good field goal kicker from 55. All right. He did get a little bit of help from the wind. It would have been good from 50, but the wind helps to get to 55, if that makes sense. But just incredible performance. I think for the Mariners, you can take a lot away from this. And I know it stings to do the, well, tough loss, but there's things to build on. There's absolutely things to build on here that Seattle went toe-to-toe with a juggernaut of a team that has now gone to 6 consecutive American League Championship Series, a team that is routinely either in the World Series or like a game away from the World Series. And I think Seattle showed that I think they, moving forward, they're certainly a threat to not only win the American League West, not only win series in the American League playoffs, but they are a threat to make the ALCS next year, make the World Series next year. And I think 2023 and beyond, it's not too early to talk about the Mariners. If you have World Series futures, you might be a little late to the party at this point. Just so many talented players, and you're led by Julio Rodriguez, who had one of the most clutch defensive plays in baseball history with a sliding catch in the gap. Like I said earlier, after the 13th inning, teams just pretend that small ball doesn't exist. And they all ding dong, that's the goal. Oscar Gonzalez, the home runs I'm about to talk about, but Julio Rodriguez chases a ball down in the gap, makes an unbelievable play to keep the Astros off the board. If that ball drops, run scores, the game's not exactly over yet, but it's hard to score when you're in that mindset of one swing ends it, and then all of a sudden the other team scores one run. So Major props to Julio. The bullpen was outstanding. George Kirby is, in fact, him. He is Himothy. He is him. I will not be taking any disagreements there. But I will say the four playoff games ever to go into the 18th all have featured a solo home run in the 18th. Jeremy Pena is the most recent. Also, Max Muncy in the World Series. Chris Burke to walk it off against my Braves, which I still, I didn't even watch the game live, and it makes me want to jump off a bridge.
Brandon Belt.
Yeah, Brandon Belt. Yeah, Brandon Belt.
2014,
launched one.
Yep.
Yeah, launched one against the Nationals. So if it goes to the 18th inning, bet all of your money on there being a home run hit. So, Alex, congratulations on a great season. And I'm excited to see the 2023 World Series between the Mariners and the Braves.
All right. I don't know about that one. I don't know if the Braves are representing the NL there. But this series was a lot of fun to watch. I mean, really. Game one, though, was it was really tough. You score six runs off of Verlander. It was looking good until, I've not to state the obvious, but the turning point was obviously Jeremy Pena getting that two out, two strike single. I mean, that the thing is, that really put Scott Servais in a tough spot, which was, do you pitch to Yordan? And I guess bring in a lefty, which I would not have brought Robbie Ray in necessarily, but it was that you pitch to Yordan or you intentionally walk him in to try to have Paul Sewald pitch to Alex Bregman, and Bregman coming into that game was 3-for-4 with two homers off of Sewald. So it was really a lose-lose situation. So that game was rough. And Yordan again doing it in game two, this time off Luis Castillo on a pitch that was off the outside corner, 98 miles per hour. I just don't know how he does it. He makes it look so easy, and it's really tough for opposing pitchers to get him out. I mean, seriously. And then that 18 inning game. I mean, I think I turned the game on because I was watching the Syracuse football game. That game ended, I think, around 6:30 Eastern, and I turned the game on. The Mariners Astros game. I think it was the seventh, maybe it was the eighth inning, and I was not expecting the game to keep going until the 18th. Really, it was a great effort by both pitching staffs. I am going to sort of agree with Splash, which was I think that it felt like a lot, like almost every player was just trying to like take the game into their own hands and just hit it out. And it led to some really, really rough looking swings, I will say. Luis Garcia coming out of the bullpen, I know he's a starter by trade. So seeing him pitch five innings, he did his job very well. All around, Paul Sewald rebounded really nicely. George Kirby did a great job for seven innings. You know, Matt Festo pitched really well. Matt Brash got out of a big time jam with two men on, striking out Christian Vasquez and Jose Altuve with that slider. I'm really excited to see Brash as a reliever going forward, I think. And you know, that's the thing is the Mariners have a lot to be proud of this year, and I think they're going to be back next year. I mean, they're a very young team. You know, they don't have many big free agents this offseason. They have Julio Rodriguez locked up for a while. I mean, they have a lot going right for them. And I think that it will keep getting better. You know, I get Houston isn't going anywhere either. I think Houston's going to be a problem for a quite some time. And it's just crazy to me thinking about how bad the Astros were during my childhood, when they were losing 100-plus games a year, and now they're winning 100-plus games, it feels like, almost every year. Six straight ALCS appearances. I mean, trash cans or not, that's just it's basically unheard of these days. Not even the Dodgers have done that. Not even the Yankees haven't done that. So, yeah, crazy series. I know it was only three games, and I think so. I saw someone say it's got to be, like, the toughest three-game sweep you can get. On both sides, really, because the Astros had to work very hard to get the sweep. It wasn't like they just rolled over the Mariners every single day. So that's basically covers that. So the Astros are going to move on. I say we move on over, unless you guys have any other final thoughts on that series. Anyone?
I want to point out really quickly, I'm looking on Twitter right now, and I'm just like, come on. Again, because I follow another friend of the show here, not going to say any names, I just saw that the Houston Astros just dropped new merch. that has the front of it is the Who's Your Daddy instead of Your Don, which I mean, you know, that's fine. But then on the back has the win probability chart.
They thought they were doing something like the 28-3 thing. Yeah.
Yeah, you're not cool. Sorry, Houston.
Okay, I'm gonna butt in here. So with what I do with U Stadium, one of the things we do is we make shirt designs, right? So we have like a Lamar Jackson flip into the end zone from the Chiefs game last year, a Zach Wilson rocket arm t-shirt, Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and the Grim Reaper from the Bills playoff game, stuff like that. And there, I just sent a message in the chat. Hey guys, we should be on red alert in case something stupid happens at the Guardians Yankees game. That'd be a great time to push merch, like if someone hits a walk-off home run. And I was giving examples like, I think we could still get something out of the Hoskins play, like the bat spike, right? Or the rally goose for the Padres, or anything Jordan did in that series, with all due respect. I think it's good marketing.
Yeah, well, I'll be honest, I was not terribly surprised by that because, well, there was the Astros have just been on one lately. It feels like they're a social media team. I will say there's a couple other things I do want to mention, which is Zach Greinke was at that game, and he did not get recognized somehow, which is, I guess, you know, Zach Greinke, maybe he just fits in with the rest of the crowd. And also one other shout out, he obviously wowed us a lot this year, but Cal Raleigh caught all 18 innings with a torn UCL in his thumb. So, I don't know how anyone does that.
Cal Raleigh is built different.
Built different. But, like, also catching 18 innings, I don't get how anyone does that. I was not much of a catcher when I played baseball, so I definitely would have never done that. But, yeah, that's honestly very impressive, so... There you go on that. And since Swash briefly mentioned it, let's just jump over to the other ALDS, which I know isn't finished yet, the Guardians and the Yankees. They're 2-2 going into Game 5, which may not be played tonight. Apparently now they're saying, as of this recording, it is 5:46 p.m. Game's supposed to start at 7. And there is rain in the forecast, and apparently they're about to have a meeting about what to do with the rain. But anyways, what have you guys seen from this series? And do either of these teams really have a chance against the Astros?
So I'm going to say they have a chance against the Astros. We're going to touch on a certain 111 win team that keeled over and died this weekend. So anything is possible in Major League Baseball playoffs. I will say the Yankees and Guardians would go about that in very different ways, going about beating the Astros in very different ways. I'd say that, but is there a contingency plan if you're like Yankees Guardians? I you probably can't move the game the night of, and I'm thinking like ballparks around like in the Northeast, like Toronto has, you know, Toronto can be enclosed. That's about it, but that requires going to Canada. Like that's the only thing I can think of in terms of a major league stadium in that area, because Philly's not, Pittsburgh's not, City Field's not, Boston's not. I don't know what you're doing there. If you're trying to move the game,
this I think is a bad idea, but apparently there is some talk about maybe moving the game to tomorrow. But the thing is, then if you go to tomorrow, then one of those teams has to play the ALCS the next day. So,
okay, I have a wacky idea. What if you just move the game to Houston?
I mean. I'm not sure I agree with that.
I don't agree with it either, but hey, Houston at least has a closed roof potential. But either way, I think with Yankees Guardians, it's been really a tale of the Yankee two wins have come, you know, Judge, Bader, you home runs, good defense from Oswaldo Cabrera, you know, bing bong, like all the Yankee stuff, right? And then the Guardians wins, it's just death by a thousand cuts. The big one was game three, first game in Cleveland. The Yankees enter the ninth inning, bottom of the ninth, three outs to go with Wandy Peralta on the mound, 5-3. In this situation, with a two-run lead in the ninth inning, the Yankees historically 167 wins, zero losses. And remember, I said first Guardians win, the Guardians single the Yankees to death, bloop the Yankees to death, whatever you want to call it. Jose Ramirez has this little fisted shot to the shortstop, but the shortstop's not there because Ramirez is batting left-handed, and you're like, what's going on? Miles Straw gets a hit, and it's like, what's going on here? Then Josh Naylor, who I've like praised Josh Naylor as this, the epitome of clutch all season long. And then he strikes out Oscar Gonzalez with his third go-ahead hit of the playoffs already. The Guardians have won four games, and he has three go-ahead or game-winning hits. So the Guardians do the whole small ball routine, and I can respect that. I cannot respect their Twitter account for posting about it. So I will be rooting for the Yankees for the first time in years. But it just depends tonight, at least depends on which Tyone shows up. And it depends on who shows up for the Yankees bats, because I've said all series, I've said, even in our pre-show here, the Yankees have a higher floor or have a higher ceiling than the Guardians. If the Yankees play like the Yankees and have a good, if the Yankees have a good day, the Guardians are going to get mollywhopped. That's just the fact of the matter. But if the Yankees don't have a good day, you could lose 3-2 and you're thinking about this series for a long time. You might be thinking about this series about 350 million times when Judge signs a contract to play for the San Francisco Giants. You know, that's how bad this series could get. But I think the Yankees are the better team. I think the Yankees would win in a 7-game series, a 9-game series, whatever. But when it comes down to one game, who knows? That said, I'm going to pick Cleveland tonight.
That was the weirdest rant that ended in one of the most saddest ways of saying Cleveland. I'm in the same boat of saying that Cleveland is my pick for it. Here's what I want to say about this too, is that we've said a lot about how the Yankees are this amazing team, this team that has so much talent with it. Looking at this series itself right now, I want you, without taking a look at baseballreference.com or anything like that, I want you to say, as a team, over the course of this series, what are they batting? What's their batting average as a team? Like, for this team that's supposed to be an offensive, and it's supposed to be an offensive force, what is their batting average?
I believe the Yankees are batting under 150.
I'm going to say, Matt, like, I'm going to go with 160.
You're closer, Mac. It's 177. As a team, again, also just like the Braves, batting below the Mendoza line. Sorry for the little shot there, Splash. But, and then Cleveland, as a team, is batting 250. That alone right there gets rid of, in my opinion, what a lot of the offensive show is for the Yankees. Yes, they have all this talent, but they're not showing it. They're not showing a whole lot, to be fact, when it comes to it. And then you take a look at the pitching side of things, and are they doing better at pitching? Surprisingly, yes, they are. They have an ERA right now, a 3.19, if you get rid of the infinity ERA from Jameson Taillon. So they're batting they have a 3.19 ERA, whereas Cleveland has the ERA team of 3.50. So very similar at that point, but the hitting has been what's been keeping the Guardians alive. We've talked a lot about how good the Guardians pitching staff is, having Shane Bieber to throw, Zach Plesac, Cal Quantrill, all these guys, and then in the bullpen having Karinchak. Oh, sorry. Also, do not want to forget Tristan McKenzie. My apologies. But having guys, again, like Karinchak, like Emmanuel Clase, that are also pitching out of their minds right now, that bullpen and the pitching staff is stupid good, and the hitting is coming around too. So right now, we've been talking a lot about with the Yankees that they've been sputtering, and honestly, it's showing. Yes, you have Aaron Judge, who right now over the course of the series is batting 125. Thank you very much. IKF, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, is currently batting 273. Just want to make sure I throw that in there. And actually, he is the second, he's just the third highest batting average, right behind the tie at first between Anthony Rizzo and Harrison Bader. So I mean, I look at this right now, and I 100% have Cleveland. I think Cleveland right now is the better team. Their pitching, in my opinion, is better than the Yankees, or is right on par with the Yankees, and their hitting is much more consistent. Yes, they had that long game. But looking at it right now, in every single one of these games, Cleveland has consistently scored at least two runs, except for the first game, they scored one. But the offense is showing up a lot more consistently, in my opinion. Yankees, actually, no, I'm going to take that statement back. My apologies, because the Yankees have actually been the definition of consistency, where they have scored 4, 2, 5, 4 runs in their games, averaging for about between 3 and 4. I still think the Guardians are the team that pulls this out here now in the very end of it. Cleveland's pitching has been strong. Their offense has been consistent. But overall, when I take a look at these guys batting individually for the Yankees, I'm not impressed.
And really, the surprise for me this series has been Harrison Bader. I mean, Bader, I get he was hurt for most of that, most of his stint in the regular season with the Yankees. But he also just, you know, when he came off the IL, he wasn't really doing much at the plate. And then all of a sudden, he's hit three homers this series. Also, he absolutely owns Cal Quantrill. I think after his home run last night, he was 5 for 6 with 3 homers against him. So that's pretty impressive. Also, bear in mind, he is from Bronxville, New York, and went to Horace Mann, which is in the Bronx. So he's a real local kid for them. He grew up a Yankee fan, too. So, I mean, Bader's been great, but other than that, it's just been disappointing, I feel like, from the Yankee lineup. You look up and down, and all right, so Bader has he's slugging 929, so that's one thing, but nobody on their team is hitting higher than 286, which is Bader and Anthony Rizzo. As Waldo Cabrera is 2 for 15, you know, Judge is 2 for 16. It's just a lot of it's a lot of nothing, in my opinion. And to be fair, I don't think the Guardians offense has necessarily been amazing, you know, but When I look at going into tonight is, and I'm pretty sure both teams are going to be going bullpen games because Tyone is supposed to start for the Yankees and he's been moved to the bullpen for the playoffs. And for the Guardians, it's supposed to be Chevalle, who's also previously a starter, but the Guardians also have a well-rested James Karinchak, Emmanuel Clase, Trevor Stephan, and Sam Henches. So they have all their weapons ready. You know, they didn't have to use them last night. And I feel like that was sort of like, Terry Francona playing chess almost. You know, all right, they lost yesterday, yes. But you have your big guns ready for however long you need them for tonight. Oh, and I should mention, Eniel De Los Santos was also not used yesterday. So, you know, all right, maybe you trot Eli Morgan back out. And I guess Shane Bieber supposedly isn't available. But I'm going to call it the bluff here and say that if they need Shane Bieber to pitch today, he will pitch. So I think the Guardians win this game, but I don't know if any of these teams can get past Houston. That's the thing. And when I look at a potential ALCS matchup, and I want your guys' thoughts on this. I mean, Houston, so it looks like we all have Cleveland winning tonight. What do you think can happen in the ALCS, though? I know that there have been a lot of upsets this postseason.
I think this is one that you head into this series knowing you have to win 4 games. So if you're the Guardians and you say you go all in 4 times, if you land your punch on the heavyweight, you can knock him down in 4 punches, the word to punch out. So if you can time it almost. So that's one of the things I love and hate about baseball is how random and how scattered it is that you could have a 330 hitter followed by a 330 hitter followed by a 330 hitter. Well, they fail 67% of the time. So you might have an inning that one of them gets a hit and the other two, you know, don't get a hit. And the next inning or the next time they're up, the middle one gets a hit. And the next time up, the third one gets a hit. Well, they all end up with that 333 batting average, but they didn't cluster their hits. So this is a case of the Guardians a couple nights ago had 3 times as many hits as the Yankees. It took them until the bottom of the 9th with 2 outs to win the game. This is a case against the Astros. Astros that the Astros are a much more well-rounded team than the Yankees are, and they have a better bullpen, better starting pitching. Although I'm going to pause for a second. Gerrit Cole, that's why you pay him $300 million. Games like Game 4. So big props to Cole. Hostile environment, ace. That's my spiel there. But I think if Cleveland can land their punches, that they're if they can cluster their hits together, they can squeeze out a couple wins. And as soon as you win one or two games and you have those momentum swings, it's kind of like Atlanta against the Dodgers last year. You walk it off game one, you walk it off game two, and that gives you like, hey, maybe we can actually hang with this team. Maybe we can actually beat this team. And hope is a hell of a drug. I will say that. And if the Guardians, you know, return home and it's 1-1, you know, and they're going to Progressive Field and it's 1-1, or they're going into game five and it's 2-2, they got a shot.
Here's my bit is that after watching the Astros play against Seattle, something became very evident, and something that you kind of brought up here, Splash, as well, is that they're all going for the hero play. They were all trying to hit as much as they possibly could and really fell off a lot on a lot of it. So I'm taking the Guardians, and it's because I like their pitching a lot. Do I not like the Astros pitching? No, I think their pitching is absolutely phenomenal. And every time they one of their guys goes out there, it's going to be a hard press to get hits. But you know what? Watching what the Guardians have done, I think they got a really good chance. I think that they can go against the Astros toe for toe. And I think it's going to happen. I don't know. Just call it something where I think that the bullpen is really going to be covering a lot of the heavy work for Houston while the offense is doing. I get a lot of vibes of the 2001 Seattle Mariners from these Cleveland Guardians. Good defense, great pitching with timely hitting to come. And that's what I've seen from this team, from the Guardians team, pretty much most of the season itself. I know Bet Sacrilege calling them the Mariners, as I call them the 2001 Mariners, after losing to Seattle, what, 6 out of 7 times this year? But regardless, I think overall that I think a lot of people are going to be sleeping on Cleveland when it comes against the Astros, just because it is the team that has the pedigree against the underdog team. But you know what? I love me a good underdog story. I've taken Guardians moving to the World Series.
Yeah, I think it's going to be closer than people expect because, I mean, I feel like people have been sleeping on the Guardians basically ever since they clinched the AL Central. Like, I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, whatever, it's just a weak division, all that. But the Guardians are pretty good, and they, you know, they finished the season by winning 24-30. Now they sweep the Rays in the wild card round. Game five, I feel pretty good about them against the Yankees. But I just think the Astros have too much. And I feel like the Astros are clearly, on paper, the best of the teams remaining. So on one hand, you could say, all right, the Astros are going to roll over everyone else. They're going to win the World Series easily. I don't think that's going to happen. But I just think that the Guardians might run out of gas. You know, maybe that bullpen that's been so good, you know, if they have a blip in the radar, all of a sudden they're in trouble. So I have the Astros winning that series in 7 games, actually. You know, I think it might be, you know, 3-2 Guardians going back to Houston, and then Houston wins the last two. That's what I see happening. So anyways, moving on to the last division series, which was the, in my opinion, the biggest shocker here and one of the biggest upsets in baseball history. Heck, I can't remember the last time I've seen something like this, but the San Diego Padres upset the 111 win giant that is the Los Angeles Dodgers. I did not expect this at all to happen. I think I will give myself some credit here. I had the Dodgers and Braves both getting bounced in the NLDS back when we first made our postseason picks, but I had them getting eliminated by different teams. Guys, what do you make of this NLDS? Because I don't know if anyone had the Padres winning.
Well, as Freddie Freeman put eloquently, the Padres were hot recently. The Dodgers have been hot for 8 months, and they're going to be pretty hot in Cancun the next few weeks. But this is the second biggest upset in the history of the Major League Baseball playoffs by win difference. The only one larger happened so long ago that the Chicago Cubs hadn't even won the World Series to begin their drought. It's the 116-win 1906 Chicago Cubs. They were 23 games better than the Chicago White Sox. The White Sox beat them 4-2 in the 1906 World Series. The Cubs then won the next two World Series, went 108 years without winning one, yada, yada, yada. You get that. This is a upset of historic proportions, and it felt like it was coming for the Dodgers, that you had this weird Freddie Freeman quote. You have, like, they dominated the Padres all year. If you told me in advance that the Phillies would beat the Braves, like, if you just said, okay, the Phillies are going to beat the Braves this series, I could get it. I was in a Twitter space with a guy that said Philly in 5, and I'm like, I get it. I'm going to pick the Braves in 4, but I get it. If Philly wins, you know, I get it. If you said the Padres win, I wouldn't have gotten it, but it does. You have these weird upsets when you play a team it ended up playing 23 times. It happens in NFL playoffs. It happens in NBA playoffs. It happens in the NHL playoffs. When you have these rivals, and you know, I think the Dodgers fans, Dodgers players, they think the Padres are a pushover. Like, they don't respect the Padres. The Padres, they get amped for these games. This is the biggest game Petco Park has seen in 16 years. The last time they were in the playoffs as a home team with fans, right? And they showed up. They showed up. The rally goose in game 2 didn't spawn any rally because the score didn't change, but they are owning the rally goose now. Congratulations to them. Joe Musgrove has pitched his tail off, timely hitting. And they beat the Dodgers 3 times in 5 days. That is no small feat. A 111-win Dodger team goes down to the first round, and or the second round, technically. And I will say that the people that are wanting to change the playoff format because the Braves, Mets, and Dodgers are out are actual lunatics, and they should not be allowed to have baseball opinions.
Yeah, I second that. This is weird to me because at this point, like, we look at the overall for these two teams, and it's obvious which team was the better team. Like, on this one, we continuously made jokes about how the Dodgers are the MLB The Show team of real-life baseball. And honestly, to be fair, that makes sense then. That makes a lot of sense why they're out of the playoffs then right now, because MLB The Show has a lot of flukes in it that somehow makes things just not work properly. Perfect hits being lineouts and foul balls. Anyway, I feel like that's kind of what is going on here. With this was another one, like we were just talking about a minute ago, of the underdog story. This is another underdog where the Padres were the team that had everything go wrong for them for a little bit. Remember, there was a stretch of time here where Fernando Tatis just got busted for steroid use, where Josh Hader had an ERA of like, what, 15 plus? And he was their big acquisition. They also had a few other big ones. And one of the big acquisitions, and Juan Soto was not batting that well, and Josh Bell was batting well below the Mendoza line. Now look at them. They figured out what was going on and still made it to the playoffs, albeit they had to do it through the wild card, but that's what happens when you have the Dodgers in your division. And honestly, I'm really happy for them. The one thing I don't want to see is I do not want to see them win a World Series, just because I do not want Robinson Cano to get another World Series ring. Do not want Cano to get a World Series ring. I don't care if he represents all of our teams. He does not represent all of our teams. If he represents any of our teams, then we need to find another representative. But I'm really happy for them making it on through. Do I think they're going to make it all the way? There's potential there. There's potential, especially since now there is a huge label of expectations on them for beating the Dodgers. But we'll see how that works.
Well, I mean, the thing is that the Padres have always had the talent on their roster this year. It felt like they were never clicking. And now it feels like they're finally clicking. I mean, I don't know how many people had Trent Grisham and Austin Nola being catalysts for this offense. But I guess I have to eat my words. I mean, you know, I had the Padres losing in the wild card round, and now here we are, and they're in the NLCS, And I got to give big props to their bullpen, especially, which only allowed one run in 16 and two thirds innings in the series. Josh Hader was on point. He looked like the Josh Hader that people thought they were getting. You know, you had Robert Suarez. I was really impressed with this guy. This is a guy who came back from Japan. He previously played in the Mexican League. And, yeah, he goes to Japan. He gets injured. He has a really good year in Japan. And as a 31-year-old in his rookie year, I mean, he's throwing 98, 99, 100, 101 with sink. I mean, his pitch arsenal is filthy. He was fantastic this series. You know, four scoreless innings, worked out of a couple big jams in game two. Luis Garcia looked really good. Tim Hill was strong. Pierce Johnson. The only one who allowed a run was Steven Wilson. And still, it ended up being basically insignificant. Jake Cronenworth was great this series, too. It wasn't the guys you expected to really come through for them, but they look great going into the NLCS. And honestly, I don't feel as bad now about the Mets losing to them. Seeing the Padres take down Goliath, the Goliath of all Goliaths there, I'm amazed, really. And the Dodgers, I mean, this season is a failure. There's no other way to put it. You don't win 111 games and then, come out flat against a team that's significantly worse than you in the standings. I mean, I don't know how that happened. Apparently, Dave Roberts is going to stay. I'm not surprised. But, yeah, that's the NLDS. Wow, that was insane. But real quick, before we get to my trivia segment, give me your pick for the NLCS. So San Diego has home field advantage. They'll be hosting the Phillies starting today as of this episode going up. So what do you guys see happening?
I'm going to go with a bit of a shocker. I think this Phillies lineup figured something out in the ninth inning of the first Cardinals game. Bryce Harper is playing at an MVP level. You have the Gene Segura is playing at a high level. Like I said, with the Braves Phillies segment earlier, the bottom of the order is playing with their hair on fire. And then you got something out of Hoskins. You got something out of Schwarber in the later days of those the Braves series. I think the Phillies close it out and they don't have to go back to San Diego for game six or game seven. I'm going to take Philly in five.
Bold prediction here. This is a bit interesting because both of these teams are the underdogs. Neither of these teams did. Nobody picked these teams to make it this far. Very few people, unless you are in Philadelphia or San Diego. But I think with this run right now, I'm going to go with the team that has the most talent. And to me, that team is San Diego. So I think San Diego will be making the World Series this year on the National League side. I'm going to say it's going to be in five games.
Yeah, I mean, what it comes down to for me is, I mean, I think the Padres had the biggest home field advantage, in my opinion, of any of the – I mean, it was – you could tell how loud – it was in Petco Park. That's not a diss on Philadelphia, but I think with San Diego having home field advantage here, I can't see them not winning this series. Plus, they really remind me of those mid-2010s Royals teams that eventually have won it all, but with more star power. You know, they have a great bullpen, but the talent level is endless here, especially with guys like Machado and Soto. So I have the Padres winning in six, and they head back to the World Series for the first time since 1998. But anyways, like I said, I have a trivia segment. So let's jump right into this. So what I have compiled here is I have the single season leaders for each of the remaining playoffs teams. And I'm counting both the Guardians and the Yankees for hits, wins above replacement, that's Baseball Reference WAR, homers, RBI, wins, and saves. Single season, and also this is in the live ball era, so 1920 on. Sorry, Jack Chesbro, I can't include the 41-win season from 1906 in here. So I say we do this almost Jeopardy style, but you could pick, like, I don't know, Padres saves or something, and then you guess, and then there are 30 names here, so will declare a winner that way, I think. So all of I'm thinking of a number in my head between 0 and 10. You guys both guess. That's how I'm going to decide who goes first.
4-0.
All right, Alex, you were closer. It was 6. Do you want to go first?
Sure, but I have a question about how this is going to work. So we have to name the category that we're going for and then the player?
Correct.
Okay. And it's only of teams that are remaining in the playoffs right now.
Yes, so Padres, Phillies, Astros, Yankees, Guardians.
Okay. Well, then I'll do Padres, Saves, Trevor Hoffman.
Correct. Trevor Hoffman hit 53 in 1998. Splash.
Okay, run through the rules one more time, please.
So you name – so there, the categories are hits, baseball reference war, homers, RBIs, wins, and saves of each of the remaining playoff teams, single season.
Gotcha. Okay. New York Yankees home runs, Aaron Judge.
Yep, that's correct. That's an easy one. So all right, 1-1. Alex.
I'm gonna go Padres hits and go Tony Gwynn.
Correct. Tony Gwynn at 220 in 1997. That's so all right, Splash.
Philadelphia Phillies home runs, Ryan Howard.
Correct. Ryan Howard at 58 in 2006. Hang on, I'm just deleting the ones that have already been taken. So,
no worries, you're good.
Yep.
I don't know if I want. I think I'm gonna go with this one. Are you ready for me?
Yeah, sure.
Cool. I'm gonna go Yankees WAR, and go Babe Ruth.
Correct, Babe Ruth, 14.2 in 1923. I don't ask me how he did that, but. I guess, to be fair, Babe Ruth was way ahead of his time. So, yes, you're correct. So, I believe, yep, there you go.
Philadelphia Phillies, baseball reference war, Mike Schmidt.
Yep, Mike Schmidt, 9.8 in 1974. That's a big number there. So, that, I believe, is one of the best ever for a third baseman. So, all right, you guys both have 3. Alex, back to you.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out who else I want to go with on this. I'm going to go, because now is when I am legitimately guessing here.
Okay.
I'm going to go Cleveland Guardians slash their other team names. I'm going to go Saves and say Class A, because I think Class A had it this year.
That is incorrect.
Ah, dang it.
Do you want me to give the correct answer, or should Splash? Do you want to steal here?
Do I lose my next guess?
No.
Okay. Cleveland Guardians Saves.
Uh-huh.
I will go with. I don't even know if he pitched for them. Cleveland Guardian Saves. I'm going to go John Franco.
John Franco never pitched for the Cleveland baseball team. The correct answer was Jose Mesa of 1995. All right.
I really was about to say easygoing Eddie Guardado, but.
Guardado, I don't think he pitched for Cleveland either.
He played for the Twins. Yeah, he played for the Twins.
He played for the Twins and the Mariners and I think the Reds. And
Mariners, yeah. I do be liking some easygoing Eddie Guardado.
Yeah. I was a fan of Eddie. So. All right, so no point there. So you guys are still even at 3. Splash.
Okay, I only know this because I did some research for our 10 war, my 10 more trivia. Cleveland Guardians baseball reference war, Al Rosen.
That is incorrect.
Wait, what?
Yep. Alex, steal.
Yeah, I'm going to go Jim Thome.
That is also incorrect. The correct answer is Lou Boudreau.
It's who?
Lou Boudreau, 1948. He had 10.4.
The other one.
So what are we playing to right now? I'm curious.
What? What do you mean?
What are we playing to a certain thing at this point, or are we trying to go through all the categories?
I'm trying to go through all the categories here. You guys are tearing through them. So, all right. So there's eight off the board. You guys are even at three. Alex, go.
Okay. Let's go with what were some of the other categories we could pick?
So there's war, there's homers, RBIs, wins, saves, and hits.
Okay.
Let's also see all the live ball era, so you won't see like Jack Chesbro in here, unfortunately.
are you sure about that? No.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, oh no, that doesn't work either. There are so many different ideas I want to go with these, but yeah. I know they're not right. That's the problem. Let's see here. Playoff teams. We got Yankees. I could go Yankees. Oh, Yankees wins. I'm going to say Ron Guidry.
That is incorrect.
Dang.
Oh! He was close, but...
Oh, I think I have another name for it. That's okay.
Okay. All right, Splash. I guess my attempt to steal here... Yankees wins, Whitey Ford.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
That is also incorrect.
Whoa.
Yeah, the correct answer, and I was surprised by this too, the correct answer was Carl Mays won 27 games in 1921. Okay, so we
both look stupid right now.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing is Ford was just behind him with 26. But unfortunately, the live ball era started in 1920. So Carl Mays is technically the right answer. So you guys are still even at three. Splash, you're next.
New York Yankees, RBI, Lou Gehrig.
Correct. Lou Gehrig, 185 in 1931.
Okay.
I don't know why Siri just started acting up for me, but yeah. Okay, go. Okay.
I'm going to go Astros. Yep. And Astros wins. I'm going to say Nolan Ryan.
That is incorrect. Splash. Steal.
Okay.
Splash. Steal.
Astros wins. I will go with Mike Scott.
So close because you had half of his name right, but
is it Mike Hampton?
Mike Hampton in 1999.
No. I refuse to acknowledge that now on this Mets, podcast.
Mets, Braves.
And he was on the Marlins for like an hour.
Okay, that's a fair point.
He's
one of the 17 guys to play for all three of our teams.
No, he never played for the Mariners.
Never played for the Mariners.
Yeah, he did. Yes, he did.
When?
Did he?
Yeah. Yeah. He played with the Mariners in 1993.
Oh, well, All right. There you go. Well, in 99, he won 22 17 games.
Innings for them.
All right. Okay. There you go. Yeah. In 99, he won 22 games and led the league in walks. So, anyway, Splash, now your pick.
I think I'm going to try to clear out the Yankees. New York Yankees hits Don Mattingly.
Correct. Don Mattingly, 238 in 1986. So you're up 5-3. Alex. There's one category left for the Yankees. So
I didn't want to go Yankees anyway. I was going to go. Oh, this is actually a tough one because I don't know. Astros home runs, Yordan. Didn't he have one big
incorrect
season? Yeah.
Houston Astros home runs, Jeff Bagwell.
Correct. Jeff Bagwell.
Dang it.
2000 hit 47. So, all right. Splash, you're up 6-3. Now you're up.
Is strikeouts a category?
No, I thought about it, but
frick, I was about to just rattle off all the Garrett Coles. Home runs, war, win. Oh, okay. Okay. I forgot one. Okay. Yankees saves left, right?
Yep. That's the last one.
New York Yankees saves, Mariano Rivera.
Correct. He saved 53 games in 04. So all the Yankees are off the board. Alex, back to you. So Splash is up 7-3, just so you know.
I feel so stupid for not thinking of saves and Mariano.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's why I was confused when you didn't pick Yankees saves there.
I got this. I don't remember what any of the categories are. I'm just kind of trying to remember. It's like you saying it, but it's like, if Okay. Okay, let's see here. So let's go. You said war for one, it's just for one season, right?
Correct. These are all single season categories.
It's all single season. Okay. You know, it'll eventually hit eventually. Astros war, Yordan.
I mean, you know, the hard part here is that Yordan is a DH, which already puts him at a disadvantage. So no,
do not care. Yordan. It will happen. He's hitting too well.
I appreciate your effort here. Splash, go. steal, I mean.
do pitchers count?
No, this is position player war.
Oh, okay, okay. I was
okay, good, because my other guess was going to be Verlander, okay. Nolan Ryan.
Houston Astros single season baseball reference war. Jeff Bagwell again?
Incorrect. It was Craig Biggio. Craig Biggio okay, in 1997 had 9.4. Mm. I think a bit of an advantage to him because of he plays second base.
Yeah. So. I was thinking of the big year Bagwell had 94, but that was a strike year, so I missed a month.
Yeah, that's the thing. He was in their top 10, though, multiple times. So, Alex, back to you. Or, sorry, okay. Not Alex. You just went. Splash, you're up.
Cleveland Guardians runs batted in Manny Ramirez.
Correct. 165 in 1999. So Splash, you're padding your lead. You're up 8-3. Alex, you got some ground to make up, but here you go.
Cleveland wins. Have we done Cleveland wins yet?
You have not.
Okay, Cleveland wins CeCe Sabathia.
That is incorrect. Splash.
Cleveland Guardians wins Bob Feller.
Yep. That is also incorrect because, again, the live ball era started in 1920. And Jim Bagby won 31 games in 1920. Bob Feller was second with 27 in 1948, I believe. So good effort, though. Let's Splash, you're on the clock now.
So San Diego Padres hits Tony Gwynn.
We've already done San Diego hits.
Oh, it's okay. My apologies. Okay. San Diego Padres home runs. I'm going to go with one Ken Caminiti.
That's incorrect. Alex, you want to steal?
Yes. So for the Padres homers, let's go with, I'm trying to think of big power hitters with the Padres in. For some reason, the only name that's coming to my mind is Bartolo Colon, but I know that, but obviously he didn't play the team. Oh, like anytime I think of home runs in Petco, I'm only going to think of Bartolo Colon. Let's see. That's things I don't even remember a ton of, like, Adrian Gonzalez.
That's also incorrect. The correct answer was Greg Vaughn, hit 50 in 1998. Honestly, Splash, I was kind of expecting you to get that. So anyway, Alex, you're up.
Okay. What do we have left from the Guardians?
Guardians, we have hits and homers.
Hits and homers. Guardians. Let's go homers and say Jim Thome.
That's correct. Jim Thome hit
52. I finally got a point, guys. It happened.
Yeah, so you're back on the board. It's 8-4 now. Splash.
Cleveland Guardians hits Roberto Alomar.
That is incorrect. Alex, you want to steal? This is a tough one, I'll admit.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to get it, but I'm gonna say Kenny Lofton.
No, it was Earl Averill. Had 232 hits in 1936.
Yeah, so, obviously Earl Averdue.
Yeah, I know. All right, so we're the Yankees and Guardians are completely cleared out. So,
okay. Tell me something about the Padres. What are the categories for the Padres?
War, RBI, and wins.
Tony Gwynn war.
Correct. Tony Gwynn 8.6 in 1987. So you're sort of getting back in the game. You're down 8-5. Splash.
I'm gonna roll San Diego Padres wins, and I'm gonna go recent name Jake Peavy.
That is incorrect, Alex.
Okay, so I'm trying to think of names, and that's a reliever, so it's not gonna be one who leads in wins. Because the first thing that came to my mind was Heath Bell, but that's a reliever. So I'm going to go with. Wow, I can't even think of a. I can't even think of a single pitcher who's ever pitched for the Padres right now.
Oh boy. Okay.
This is a problem. I'm going to just, you know what, just, no, because that's single season, that doesn't work. Because I legitimately don't want to hold this up too much longer, I'm just going to say Heath Bell, because funny.
All right, that was a good effort. It was Randy Jones, who won 22 in 1976 and won the Cy Young that year. He should not have won the Cy Young that year, but he did, because he had, I believe, under 100 strikeouts that year. But there you go there. So, now there's only one category left for San Diego. Splash, have at it.
Wait, didn't I? I just took Padres wins.
No, sorry, Alex. Alex, you go.
So, okay, what do we have left for... okay, no, we already took everything from the Guardians. There's nothing left for the Yankees either.
Correct.
Okay, so it's Padres and it is Phillies. What are we left in the Phillies?
Hits, RBIs, wins, and saves.
Oh, for saves, Pavlon.
Incorrect. Splash go.
I'm really glad it is a Pavlon. Oh, just want to make that clear.
Philadelphia,
he's their career saves leader.
Yeah, Philadelphia Phillies saves. I would take a stab at. I can picture him in MLB Power Pros, but I can't remember his name.
Oh boy!
Oh my goodness. He has a slurve. I think if I describe him, Alex could probably take him out. But Tom Gordon.
That is incorrect. It's a guy we heard earlier. It's Jose Mesa. Saved 45 games in 02.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so Mesa holds, I believe he's up there for the Pirates too somewhere. Like, I don't know. Jose Mesa saved over 300 games for a number of different teams. So, right,
Splash's turn.
Splash.
Great.
There are only seven Padres. Okay. So Padres RBIs?
Yes. Padres RBIs, Ken Caminiti.
Correct. Kenton Caminiti, 130 in 1996. So you're up 9-5.
Okay, fair Alex. Enough. Phil, we're gonna go with Phillies and hits. I know this isn't right, but I'm gonna go with it anyway. I'm gonna say Shane Victorino.
Incorrect. Splash, your chance to steal.
Philadelphia Phillies hits, Richie Ashburn.
That is also incorrect. It is Lefty O'Doul, 254 hits in 1929. So he was pretty good back then. I understand this is difficult for some of these older franchises. It's why I went with Live Ball Era to at least make it a little easier, but at the same time we've ended up here anyway. Splash.
Okay. Philadelphia Phillies RBI, Ryan Howard.
Incorrect. Alex Steele.
Yeah.
Well, you weren't too far off. It was Chuck Klein, 1930. Oh, so it was another old time player, but like you almost had. So all right, so no points.
I mean,
there.
You know, might as well go first.
It's still 9-5 splash. And now out
What's even left?
So we have left? Phillies wins, Astros hits, RBI saves.
Phillies wins, Roy Halladay.
Incorrect, Splash.
Philadelphia Phillies wins, Robin Roberts.
Correct, Robin Roberts.
Yeah, you got it.
28 wins in 1952. So you're up 10-5. That basically seals it. But let's keep Splash. You're up for that. We only have Astros categories left.
Yeah. Okay. Houston Astros hits Jose Altuve.
Correct. Jose Altuve, 225 hits in 2014. Alex.
Sorry, can you say it one time? My thing glitched for a second. Can you repeat that?
So he just took Astros hits, which was Jose Altuve. The only ones left are Astros, RBIs, and saves.
Astros, RBIs, we're going to say Yordan.
Are you actually guessing Yordan? Or?
I mean, here's the thing is that you were bouncing back and forth. So I'm thinking, oh, God, he's been saying it the entire time. Please say it now. Please say it now. No, okay, fine. Then I'll say Craig Biggio.
All right, well, those were both wrong. So,
dang.
Splash, you want to steal?
Houston Astros, RBI. I'll take another member of the Bees, Lance Berkman.
Correct. Lance Berkman, 136 in 2006.
Okay. And last
one. Yep.
Oh, my goodness. Is it him? Is it at Houston Astros' Brad Lidge?
Incorrect.
No.
Alex. And I should mention there are actually two players tied for the record here. So no. You guys, I guess, theoretically could split this or something.
Okay.
Alex, go. Incorrect.
Jose Valverde?
Jose Valverde is one of them in 2008.
Okay. And?
And who's the other player?
Billy Wagner?
Correct, Billy Wagner.
Yeah!
Billy Wagner in 2003, saved 44 also. So congrats. Two Mets legends also. One of those guys has me blocked on Twitter. But yeah. That's...
One of them should be in the Hall of Fame.
One of them should be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, and one of them has the best picture ever on Baseball Reference.
Oh, yes. Papa Grande has an amazing picture on Baseball Reference. But anyways, we've blown long past our time here, and I'll take some responsibility there. But anyway, obviously, you know, we are coming down towards the end of the baseball season, so I'm sure you'll get more. Maybe we'll get some episodes where it's just straight-up trivia. During the off season, which I'm sure will be a lot of fun, as we demonstrated last time. Yeah, no, honestly, I love trivia. That's why I made this a bit of a longer segment. I just maybe tried to take a little more than I expected. But anyway, thank you guys for jumping on today, though. I appreciate taking the earlier time slot, as I have an early flight tomorrow. But make sure to follow us on Twitter. Follow Alex at the Sports Guy 242. Follow Splash at Mr. Splashman 19 and follow myself at Mathias_A_K. Just keep Tim will mainly be putting these out on Mondays. So anyway, thank you all for listening, and I hope to see you all real soon.